Hello, everybody. This is Blake Ruby from San Antonio. It is Sunday, the 20th of January. It's been 2 weeks since I last spoke with you. I hope everybody out there in internet radio land is doing all right. I'm doing well. I love this show. To be able to talk about something that you're passionate about and help make the world a better place. One of the mediums to do that is internet radio. And, of course, FM radio and television, AM radio, too. And maybe one day, God willing, I would like my own radio show on FM radio. But even better than that, my own television show. But in the meantime, I've got this show of mine entitled God is on the Sun. And I know that some people out there might disagree with a lot of the things I talk about. And that's all right. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. And what matters most is the truth. What is really true? Isn't this life just one big, gigantic quest for the truth, isn't it? Isn't one thing, it's another. One aspect of life or another, we're all looking for the truth. And sometimes we believe things, other times we know things. Sometimes we can bridge the gap between belief and knowledge. But there's a lot of things that I talk about on my show I think you need to know. Because there's a lot depending on what we do nowadays. There's a lot at stake. Our lives are at stake. Not only our present lives, but the lives after, in the afterlife. Because, my friends, this life is like a school. It is a learning environment. And the object is to graduate with honors. Yes. The universe is like a university. The university of the universe. You have planets that are like kindergarten and other planets that are like a university. And through a process known as reincarnation, because yes, you out there that don't believe, you're going to die. You got a feeling that some people don't think they're going to die, that they're invincible. Everything I talk about involves logic and rationale. What I've learned from other people. Hey. And so now, after putting everything together, creating my reality system like a jigsaw puzzle, one piece at a time, and I don't have all the answers, but I'm always searching for the answers. There's so much to know. The more you know, my friends, don't you realize that the more we realize how much there is to know. There is so much to know. We've only hit knowledge here on Earth. Everything that we've become over the last couple of centuries, the technology, like the tip of an iceberg. And underneath that, there's so much to know. And rest assured that the creator of our souls and spirits is incredibly omniscient, too. There exists, my friends, an intelligence so great, it is hard to imagine just how great it is. The power to create a sun, for example. You think that's something easy? Or just one bit of life here on Earth. Take maybe an ant, a tiny little ant. You can see them scurrying around the ground. They have a mind of their own. They can go where they want. They're looking for food, of course, and to reproduce. But they have a mind of their own. You see them going left, right, going fast, slowing down, stopping. They can contact with each other, and they have eyes, and they have legs, little brains that power their bodies. and just an amazing creation, so small. And man, in all of man's glory, all of the technological glory that we have, we couldn't come close at this time to creating an ant, something as small as an ant. And I don't know for how many more years would we be able to do that, maybe hundreds of years. That's where we are now. Compare us to God, the Creator. All of our technological magnificence here, don't get me wrong, I'm talking to you on a cell phone here, and it's amazing. I can call my wife in Tokyo, where she's at right now, and just like she's in the room next to me. It's amazing. With the satellites up above in space orbiting the Earth, bouncing these waves, radio waves, cell phone waves, whatever they want to call, whatever they're called. It's incredible, but nothing compared to the Creator. Anyway, I'm already 10 minutes, just about 10 minutes into my show, and there's just so much to talk about. So how have you been? I don't know how many people are out there listening. And one of these shows, maybe the next show, which is in 2 weeks from today, I'm going to ask if any of you want to call and talk with me, ask questions. And if you want to get into a debate, as long as it's cordial, I'm okay with that. I know that some people don't agree with what I believe in. But if you don't, take into consideration that I am almost 65 years old, and I've been studying spirituality for a long time now, not to mention praying all the time. I am a prayer warrior. I pray all the time, every day. And don't you know it, once we get in our cars and head down the road, you might not want to talk about it, but the reality is that some people don't make it going from A to B. You know? It's kind of crazy because our lives don't seem to have a lot of value, a lot more than they used to. But we have a long way to go as far as honoring and respecting the lives that we have. We shouldn't put our lives at risk traveling from one place to another. There's got to be a better way. I know you agree with that. We shouldn't subject ourselves to the pain and suffering, possible death, just because we want to travel somewhere. Yes, cars are neat. Yeah, very, very cool. Although they pollute the atmosphere, that's not so cool. But anyway, I wonder where the listeners are out there today in radio, internet radio land. Are you in England, perhaps, listening? PBS Radio has gained a reputation around the world of giving people spiritual-based shows. And I've heard a couple. I'm going to listen to some more, because every time I think about it, there's so much going on in our lives. I can't do everything I want to do, but I have listened to some shows before that talk about angels, UFOs, and all kinds of spirituality, or maybe religion. If you're passionate, I talked with a man. He had a course I went to on Thursday on Fort Sam Houston, where I work at the medical command. And I told him about BBS Radio, and he seemed very interested. Was going to call Doug, and I gave him his number. And he's a very avid believer in the Bible. And I know that the Bible is a tremendous well of wisdom. You know, there's so much wisdom to be gained from the Bible. The words are incredibly beautiful in many places, although I see some discrepancies, and it's to be understood, you know, over the years how the Bible's been rewritten and translated. that it wouldn't contain 100% truth. Now, anyone who doesn't agree with that then isn't being logical in my mind, especially when you consider the other religions, you know, and who is right and who's wrong. What is the truth? The truth is the only thing that matters. And that's what we want to know. Sometimes you have to break away from the conformity, people trying to get you to agree with them, and instead stand up for what you believe in is right, stand up for what is true. But that doesn't take anything away from the Bible, as far as I'm concerned, because there is so much wisdom and truth in it, and it is an account of divine intervention throughout our history that is unmatched. There's no other religion or anyone that talks about divine intervention as much as the Bible does. And that, to me, is amazing. I like to think about all the miracles that Jesus performed. You know, that he was more than a prophet, you know. I think we're all the children of God. So the Son of God, being the only Son of God, I have a problem with that because I feel I'm the Son of God too. Not taking anything away from Jesus, but when he taught us to pray saying, "Our Father who art in heaven." Now, if you have half a brain, then you know that he means that we're all children of God. And so I don't want to say anything negative or offend anybody, but sometimes people don't listen to logic or rationale. I mean, it's like a mathematical formula. If A plus B equals C and D plus E equals C, then A and B equals D and E. You know, it's that simple. So are you following me? I know a lot of people out there are willing to listen, to open their minds and really want to hear the truth, especially nowadays, you know, with all the political competition going on, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats at each other, competing, you know, there's different strategies. You turn on CNN News or Fox News, they're always at each other's backs, always at each other's throats, always saying unkind things, never anything good. Never anything good about each other. And there's something wrong with that. You agree? We as human beings, loving, caring human beings who believe in life and not death, who believe in peace and not war, there's something wrong with the political environment, if you will, here in the United States. We shouldn't have like 50% of us. And that's what it amounts to, really, 50% Democrats, 50% Republicans. Look at the last election and the ones before. Very, very close, about half and half. A lot of countries around the world are that way, too. And we should be on the same sheet of music, but we're not. We have different things that divide us. You know, our stance on abortion, gun control, whatever it may be. But and that's what I like about John McCain. You know, he passed away last year. May God bless his soul. He was a great man. And what he went through as a prisoner of war in the Hanoi Hilton was something nobody would want to experience. And he was someone who reached across the aisle and was able to talk and come to a compromise with his fellow politicians. Something that's not seen in Washington nowadays. Now, Mr. Trump, he's a good man. I like him. I don't dislike anybody, really. You know, I see the life in people. And I respect that life. At least we have to give each other that basic respect, the life in people. But besides that, Mr. Trump is a funny guy, really. I think he's got a great sense of humor. Couple that with a billionaire businessman who's used to having his own way. And, well, he got elected 2 years ago, right? Almost to this day. Was it the 20th of January, 2017, when he had his inauguration? Anyway, so we have to rise above the petty conflicts that are going on. Think big. And the retaliation, the revenge, you know, it's understandable, but we can be bigger than that. And it's up to us, each and every person, to speak those words out into the atmosphere, to change the negativity into positivity. Because we can do that. We can help make the world a better place. You know what's been going on throughout the centuries, the war and the killings. And so we've come to a crossroads in the recent past where we have to decide if we're going to live or we're going to die, I think. Basically, I don't mean to put it in a negative way, but we have to choose life for the sake of our children and our children's children, right? We can do it. All we have to do, I'm telling you, listen, please, because I learned this from other people, is speak good words. Say good things. Now, if I turn on one of the news networks, they don't say much good things. And I can't judge them because I've said bad things before in my life, in the past. But the process of saying good words is something that you have to understand how it works. Let me rephrase that. When we speak, hey, come on. There's a dog that just came in the room here. I need my space here, Goldie. That's our dog, Goldie. She's a beautiful dog. I call her Super Dog. Because she runs. She's a powerful runner. She can jump really high. Anyway, so when we speak words, the very process of putting thoughts into words is a miraculous process. I'm sure you'll agree. Take somebody with Alzheimer's disease, for example. They can't put words coherently together. So what we are microcosms of the creation of the universe, if you will. Indeed, when the universe was created with the Big Bang, the Supreme Creator used words to put the creationary process into effect. Are you with me so far? And so those words are a little bit different than the words that we speak. And we speak English, right? There's 900-some languages and dialects here on Earth. Now, what do you think if I told you you had to learn all of those 991, I think, languages and dialects? What would you think if I asked you to learn all of them so you could speak each language and dialect fluently? Do you think that would be too much for your brain to handle? Well, that is within the scope of our capability, my friends. Your brain, our brains are amazing. Yet we only use a certain percentage of our brains. Einstein, someone like him, used a greater percentage of his brain. Our potential, really, is almost unlimited. What we can do if we had enough time to get it dedicated to learning whatever we wanted to learn, whether it be languages or anything. And so catch yourself when you start saying anything negative. I do that. Try not to complain. That too. Complaining, I mean, there's a time and a place for complaining. But we should really be cognizant of surrounding ourselves with positive energy, and that we can do by saying only good things. And it's hard to do when you feel that temptation to say something about someone, talk behind your backs. Instead, say something good about them, even just one good thing. It's like at Toastmasters, you know, the public speaking group, which I'm a member of two clubs, and I've been doing for over 11 years. When you evaluate a speech, you think about all the good things that you can say about what the person did when they gave their speech. How were their gestures, their vocal variety, their eye contact? And that's called the delivery. And what about the content of their speech? Was it interesting? Was the audience captured? Did it look as though they were kind of focused? Were they being taken away by the speech? Were they smiling, nodding their heads? And so, being a Toastmaster, being an evaluator, you learn to say good things about people. Even you have to think hard. Even if you have to really think hard about good things to say, sometimes there might not be a lot good to say, you know. Maybe they were very nervous. And so what can you say? You can say, well, you had the courage to get up there and try. And there's always something good you can say. And, of course, there are some areas for improvement. The dog's barking. The one downstairs starts barking, and the ones up here will automatically start barking. There might be a dog walking by on the street, you know, with people. Anyway, so do me a favor, please. Try to say only good things, because your words do make a difference. That energy that you put out, you might notice it. I mean, you can be around some people when they're talking, and you can feel the effects of the words. You know what I mean? So the choice is yours. And know that everything that you do is being watched. You're being watched from the celestial realms, the spirit lands. God, the creator of your soul and spirit, Father God, the supreme creator, they know the thoughts that you think. They know all about you. They know all about us. And so it behooves us to know. And also, let me tell you this. And it's in my book, The Gray Brain, The Golden Soul. Everything that we are doing is being recorded. So when you die one day, you're going to see a recording of your life. It's called The Life Review. That's why some people say the light flashed before their eyes. It's kind of a little bit like that. Everything that's going on in your life right now is being recorded. And it's being recorded and put into a heavenly computer. And Sylvia Brown talked about it in her book, one of her books. I forget the name of it. There are places in heaven that you have no idea of. Buildings. Processes that are ongoing, angels in charge of this and that, atmospheric conditions, the rotation and revolution of our planets and moons, the realm between the living and the dying, the dead, that never-never land. Angels are in charge of a lot of things. So my point was, please, try to make the world a better place by speaking positive words, not negative. The choice is yours, positive or negative. So now, my friends, I wanted to read for you, because reading is one of my passions, and it's good for you, too. Did you know that reading out loud can help you remember things better? You know, we do it when we're raising our children. We read for them in bed. Not only do they like listening to it, but it's beneficial for us. Maybe that's the reason they do like listening to it, because they know that it helps us grow. as you might have surmised from previous shows, those who know me, I talk a lot about extraterrestrials. And I'm kind of disappointed that we haven't made contact with extraterrestrials. And I don't know if it's going to happen in my lifetime or not. I don't know how much more time we have here on Earth, my friends. Because if it's God's will, it could all be over sometime soon. You know, an asteroid or earthquakes. My wife is in Tokyo. She told me they had a couple of earthquakes there over the last couple of weeks. And we haven't been very good stewards of our Earth. By the way, may God keep my wife safe and all the people in Japan, to include my stepdaughter, grandson. We haven't been good stewards of our Earth, but we're evolving, you know? And I'm going to read from another book here. In fact, let me read that book instead that tells you a little bit about our past when the first people came to Earth a long time ago. And I don't believe in Adam and Eve. That's one thing about the Bible I don't believe in. And I'm entitled to my beliefs. And my rationale is solid. My logic is really irrefutable. I don't want to take anything away from Christians. You know, there's a lot of religions out there. And religion, basically, you can't deny, is a money-making business. And they don't really deal with the truth. I don't need to say any more. So let me read from this book. It's called Abduction to the Ninth Planet. And the chapter is The First Man on Earth. I'll give you a little lead up to before when I'm going to start reading. He's been abducted. It was back in 1987 aboard a spaceship. This man, the author of the book, Michael Desmarquette, was living in Australia. And he has been identified by these extraterrestrials who are from a planet called Via Uba in our Milky Way galaxy, which is one of the most technologically and spiritually advanced in the Milky Way galaxy. And the deal is that they're monitoring different civilizations throughout the Milky Way galaxy. That's part of their stewardship. They've been given this stewardship. That's what we do. We look after each other, you know, not only here on Earth, but other sentient beings throughout the universe look after each other. That's what it's all about. It's love. It's like a universal love. It's a galactic love. And we, as a evolving civilization, going to the first rungs of the evolutionary ladder, so to speak, need guidance and help now and then, you know, now and then, time to time. And these extraterrestrials have been monitoring Earth for thousands of years and intervening at times. I've talked about them before on my past radio shows. They're extremely, extremely intelligent. Their spaceships are capable of traveling at light speed and going interdimensional. And they are hermaphrodite, possibly 9 feet tall. People on Easter Island made statues of them. I was trying to think of the word. He immortalized. Anyway. So that was before the last major cataclysms on Earth about 15,000 years ago, when the whole face of the Earth reshaped itself because of, I think it wasn't an asteroid. We've had asteroids hit Earth before in the past. And this, I think, was due to a neighboring solar system coming close, a planet that came close to ours about 15,000 years ago. And a neighboring solar system, right? And its gravitational pull affected our Earth's rotation on its axis and stopped the Earth from rotating, you know? And when that happens, earthquakes break out all over the planet, and planet basically reshapes itself, you know, and then it starts revolving, rotating on a different axis. So right now we're at a 23-degree tilt. And so Easter Island was one area there that some things survived, you know. Continents went down, other continents came up. But Easter Island survived most of that, those cataclysms. And so those statues that were created in honor of what they considered gods back then, who were really extraterrestrials, survived the cataclysms, those huge statues on Easter Island I'm talking about. So he's taken aboard the spaceship, kind of like beaming up. You know, they beamed him up. They were in the parallel universe, so they couldn't be seen. Yes, there's a parallel universe, kind of like a spiritual realm, you know. You have a physical universe and then a spiritual universe. Spiritual universe is also called the parallel universe from my studies, what I believe. And so their spaceship is round. It was then. I don't know if they changed it. In fact, I know that from what I read, they had the saucer-shaped spacecrafts before in the past, and then they evolved into a round spaceship about 70 meters in diameter, so about 200 feet in diameter, and capable of traveling the speed of light. Apparently Einstein was right when he said nothing can travel faster than the speed of light. And so what these spaceships do is that they build up to the speed of light using electromagnetic anti-gravity propulsion systems powered by, I'm not sure what, but in their case, other extraterrestrial races use kind of like a form of nuclear energy. Minerals from binary solar systems with two suns have a higher atomic element material to use to transmutate to a higher element and then releasing antimatter when they transmute and then combining that with regular matter. And so this mineral that comes from binary solar systems is rich in the gravity eight, the small gravity. I think it's the strong nuclear force, not the weak nuclear force. And it can be isolated. And then they do that in the spaceship too. They're able to isolate that gravity wave and make it go throughout the whole spaceship, and plus fire a beam, anti-gravity beam, through anti-gravity amplifiers into outer space, warp space. But for the, I'll call them the Tyubans, who have these circular spaceships, I'm not sure about their propulsion systems, but I think it's electromagnetic, maybe using some of the energy that exists that we don't know about in space, outer space, which, by the way, from what I have read and understood, is a manufactured reality. The darkness of outer space is actually just is created by the Creator, because there's really no darkness. There's only light. And so we're here in the material universe to grow because we came from a world of light. So God, the Creator, the Supreme Creator, had to create an artificial environment of darkness and nighttime for us to grow. How about that? It's not a real, environment. It's an artificial environment. Isn't that amazing? Because we, as beings of light, our spirits are beings of light. Just like in the movie Cocoon, you know? Remember that? That is our true nature. So we come into these physical bodies, and there's many different bodies, sentient beings throughout the universe. But they have one thing in common, is that is they all have the spirit and soul inside them. The soul is the brain of the spirit. And so with the Tyubans, their spaceship, then can travel, in essence, several times the speed of light by getting up to the speed of light. I know that, I won't say that. I'll keep,
on track with what I was saying. With the, I was going to make another extraterrestrial race and the way they do it, but with the extraterrestrials from Pai Uba, so they could go interdimensional. I'm not sure exactly how that's done. I know with one race that they're able to stimulate their spacecrafts with electricity and heat, and that way they can transition from one material to the spiritual universe. They can, I guess transition is a good enough word, if you know what I mean. So let me read from this book here. The First Man on Earth. From, yeah, so actually I need to finish saying what I was saying. So Michael Desmarquette, he's been abducted by these aliens. He's on board their spaceship. They picked him up in the parallel universe, the spiritual universe. And now he's on his way to their planet. And it is maybe 100 light years away. I don't know. It doesn't say that in the book. But while he's on his way there, they're talking to him or giving him some information about Earth and the truth of who we are, where we came from, certain things about our human nature, our spirituality, so that he can come back later, write a book, and enlighten people as to what the truth is and put us on the right path, you know, instead of on a path where we're intimidated by people to conform with what other people believe, even though it might not be the truth. And when it comes to money-making, a money-making business, one can't really trust what people say in that regard. Do you agree? So, it's called The First Man on Earth. He says, once comfortably reestablished in the Halos, which is the chair, the relaxation room, actually not a chair, but the relaxation room previously described, Thio, the extraterrestrial, the hermaphrodite, about 9 feet tall, began her strange recital. Michael, 1,350,000 years ago precisely, on the planet Bacchaterini of the constellation Centaur, a decision was made by the leaders of that planet following numerous conferences and reconnaissance expeditions to send inhabited vessels to the planets Mars and Earth. There was a very simple reason for this. Their planet was cooling down internally and would become uninhabitable within 500 years. They thought, with good reason, that it was preferable to evacuate their people to a younger planet of the same category. What do you mean by the same category? I will explain later. To do so now would be premature. Going back to these people, I must tell you that these beings were humans, very intelligent and highly evolved. A black race, they had thick lips, flattened noses, and frizzy hair, resembling, in these ways, the blacks now living on Earth. These people had inhabited the planet Bacchaterini for 8,008 million years, in cohabitation with a yellow-colored race. To be precise, this is what you call on Earth, this was what you call on Earth, the Chinese race. And they inhabited Bacchaterini for about 400 years prior to the blacks. The two races witnessed numerous revolutions during their time on the planet. We tried to provide relief, assistance, and guidance, but in spite of our intervention, wars broke out periodically. These, along with the natural disasters occurring on the planet, served to thin the ranks in both races. Finally, a nuclear war broke out on such a grand scale that the entire planet was plunged into darkness and temperatures fell to minus 40 of your degrees Celsius. Not only did atomic radiation destroy the population, but cold and lack of food accomplished the rest. It is a recorded fact that a mere 150 black people and 85 yellow people survived the catastrophe. From a population of 7 billion black and 4 billion yellow humans. A register of survivors was taken just before they began to reproduce and when they had stopped killing each other. What do you mean, killing each other? Let me explain the whole situation to you and you'll be able to understand better. First of all, it is important to explain that those who remained were not, as you might expect, the leaders, well-protected and specially equipped shelters. The survivors comprised three groups of blacks and five groups of yellows, had come some from private shelters and others from large public shelters. Of course, at the time of the war, there were many more than
235 people in shelters. Indeed, it's believed that there were 800,000 in all. Following months of confinement in the darkness and intense cold, they were eventually able to risk going outside. The blacks ventured out first, finding almost no trees, no plants, and no animals to speak of on their continent. It was a group isolated from the shelter in the mountains who first knew cannibalism. Because of the lack of food, when the weakest died, they were eaten. Then, in order to eat, they had to kill each other, and that was the worst catastrophe on their planet. Another group near the ocean managed to survive by eating the only living things left on the planet, which were not too contaminated, that is, the mollusks, some fish, and crustaceans. They still had unpolluted drinking water, thanks to very ingenious installations enabling them to obtain water from incredible depths. Of course, many of these people still died as a result of lethal radiation on the planet and from eating fish which were filled with radioactivity. Much the same course of events occurred in the Yellows territory, so that, as I have said, 150 blacks and 85 yellows remained, and finally deaths resulting from the war ceased and reproduction began again. All of this occurred in spite of all the warnings they had received. It should be said that before this total decimation, both the black race and the yellow race had attained a very high level of technological advance. The people lived in great comfort. They worked in factories, private and government enterprises, offices, just as happens now on your planet. They had a strong devotion to money, which to some meant power, and to others, wiser, it meant well-being. They worked an average 12 hours per week. On Boccaccherini, a week comprises 6 days of 21 hours each. They tended to the material rather than the spiritual side of their existence. At the same time, they allowed themselves to be duped and led in circles by a structure of politicians and bureaucrats, exactly as is happening now on Earth. Leaders fool the masses with empty words, and motivated by greed or pride, they lead entire nations towards their downfall. Gradually, these two great races began to envy each other. As there's only one step away from envy to hate, eventually they hated each other so much and so completely that the catastrophe occurred. Both possessing very sophisticated arms, they achieved their mutual destruction. Our historical records show, then, that 235 survived the disaster, six of them being children. These statistics were recorded 5 years afterwards, and their survival is attributed to cannibalism and certain marine life. They reproduced, not always successfully, as it was not uncommon for babies to be born with horrible misshapen heads or ugly weeping sores. They had to endure all the effects of atomic radiation on human beings. 150 years later, there are 190,000 blacks, men, women, and children, and 85,000 yellows. I speak to you of this 150-year period because this was when both races began to reestablish and when we were able to help them materially. What do you mean? Just a few hours ago, you saw our spaceship stop above the planet Remo X3. And take samples of soil, water, and air, did you not? I nodded. Then, Thio resumed, you watched as we easily annihilated a mass of giant ants as they attacked the inhabitants of a village. Indeed. In that particular case, we helped those people by intervening directly. You saw that they were living in a semi-wild state. Yes, but what happened on that planet? Atomic war, my friend. Always and eternally the same story. Don't forget, Michael, that the universe is a gigantic atom, and everything is affected by that. Your body is composed of atoms. My point is, in all the galaxies, each time a planet is inhabited, at a certain stage in its evolution, the atom is discovered or rediscovered. Of course, the scientists who discover it are very soon aware that the disintegration of the atom can be a formidable weapon, and at one moment or another, the leaders want to use it, just as a child with a box of matches is driven to set fire to a bale of straw in order to see what will happen. But coming back to the planet Boccaccherini, 150 years after the nuclear holocaust, we wanted to help these people. Their immediate need was food,
still, they were subsisting essentially from products of the sea, resorting occasionally to cannibalism to satisfy their omnivorous yearnings. They needed vegetables and a source of meat. Vegetables, fruit trees, grains, animals, all that was edible had disappeared from the planet. There remained just enough inedible plants and bushes to replenish the oxygen in the atmosphere. At the same time, an insect resembling in some ways your praying mantis had survived, and as a result of spontaneous mutation caused by the atomic radiation, it evolved to gigantic proportions. It grew to about 8 meters in height and had become extremely dangerous to the people. In addition, the insect, having no natural predator, reproduced rapidly. We flew over the planet, locating the whereabouts of these insects. This was a relatively easy task, thanks to technology that has been at our disposal since time immemorial. When we detected the insects, we destroyed them so that, in a short time, we had exterminated them. Next, we had to reintroduce livestock, plants, and trees on the planet, according to the species known to have adapted climatically in specific regions before the catastrophe. This, too, was relatively easy. It must have taken years for such a task, Michael said. A large smile lit up Bio's face. It took just 2 days, two 21-hour days. Faced with my incredulity, Bio burst into laughter. She or he laughed so heartily that I joined in, still wondering, however, if the truth was being stretched somewhat. How could I know? What was I hearing was so fantastic. What I was hearing was so fantastic. Perhaps I was hallucinating. Perhaps I had been drugged. Perhaps I would soon wake up in my very own bed. No, Michael, interrupted Thio, reading my thoughts. I wish you would stop doubting in this way. Telepathy itself should be enough to convince you. As she uttered this sentence, it struck me that even in the best planned hoax, it would hardly be possible to bring together so many supernatural elements. Thio was able to read my mind like an open book and proved it over and over again. Latoli, one of the other extraterrestrials, simply by placing her hand on me, had produced such an extraordinary feeling of well-being. I must acknowledge the evidence. I was well and truly experiencing an extraordinary adventure. Perfect, Thio agreed loud. May I continue? Please do, I encouraged. So, we helped these people materially. But as so often when we intervened, we did not allow our presence to be known, and there are several reasons for that. The first is security. The second reason is a psychological one. If we had made these people aware of our existence, and if they had realized we were there in order to help them, they would passively have allowed themselves to be helped and would have felt sorry for themselves. This would adversely affect their will to survive. As you say on Earth, God helps those who help themselves. The third and last reason is the main one. Universal law is well established and is strictly enforced as that which controls the planet's revolutions around their suns. If you make a mistake, you pay the penalty immediately in 10 years' time or in 10 centuries' time, but errors must be paid for. That's from time to time we are permitted or even advised to offer a helping hand, but we are formally forbidden to serve the meal on a plate. Thus, in 2 days, we repopulated their planet with several pairs of animals, and we established numerous plants that eventually the people could raise the animals and cultivate the plants and trees. They had to start from scratch, and we guided their progress, either by dream or telepathy. At times, we did it by means of a voice coming from the heavens. That is to say, the voice came from our spacecraft, but to them, it came from heaven. They must have taken you to be gods, said Michael. Exactly so. And it is in this way that legends and religions are established. But in cases as urgent as that one, the end justified the means. Finally, after several centuries, the planet was almost as if it had been before the nuclear holocaust. All the same, in some places, deserts had been definitely established. In other spots less affected, the flora and fauna were easily developed. 150,000 years later, the civilization was highly successful, but this time, not only technologically Happily, the people had learned their lesson and had also evolved to a high psychic and spiritual level. This occurred in both races, and the blacks and the yellows had developed strong bonds of friendship. Thus, peace reigned on the planet, but the legends remain quite clear, many of them recorded in writing, so that future generations would know exactly what had provoked the nuclear catastrophe and what its consequences had been. As I said earlier, the people knew that their planet was going to become uninhabitable within 500 years. Knowing there were other planets inhabited and inhabitable in the galaxy, they mounted one of the most serious exploratory expeditions. Eventually, they penetrated your solar system, first visiting Mars, which was known to be inhabited, and which at that time, in fact, was inhabited. The human beings on Mars had no technology, but by contrast, they were spiritually highly evolved. They were very small people measuring in height between 120 centimeters or 150 centimeters, and of mongoloid type. They lived in tribes and huts of stone. The fauna on Mars was scarce. It was a kind of dwarf goat. Anyway, so my friends, I'm going to stop reading right there, and I'm almost running out of time. That book that I read to you from is Abduction to the Ninth Planet, also known as the Thayahuba Prophecy. If you like that little bit of reading there, and oh my God, you think that's science fiction? Think again. There's a time when you need to know when something is true. Now, you might say that this man, he made this up to try to get money. These people that make these stories up, or people that tell these stories, they're usually ridiculed, ostracized, made fun of. Now, the evidence is too overwhelming. And you see how it changes these people's lives. And even if it was science fiction, if he made all those details up out of his own mind, why? I mean, I have a logical mind. I know that without a doubt it happened to him. Because you have to understand one thing, that the creator of the universe is omnipotent. And you have to understand what that means. It means that the creator can do anything, can create life anywhere, not only here on Earth, and indeed, there's a lot of life here on Earth, right? Oh my God. The insects, the mammals, the amphibians, the reptiles, the birds, the fish, thousands and thousands of different types of bodies, all created by the Creator, the Supreme Creator. And you know, anybody that thinks logically has to agree. There is a creator. Let me say this. If you don't believe in a creator, and all this life here on Earth happened by accident, is it not logical that it could happen by accident elsewhere in the universe? But if there is a creator who is powerful enough and smart enough to create this life on Earth, wouldn't that creator be powerful enough and smart enough to create either the same life or different life elsewhere in the universe? And there you have it, my friends, logic. But know some people, they want to touch it and see it for themselves. And that is a sign of young souls. There's a lot of young souls here on Earth, I think. And so they're not focused on their spirituality, developing themselves spiritually like they should be, because they think they're invincible. And they don't know when that day is. I don't know either when I'm going to transition from this life to the next. But I want to get to that place, that glorious place, that spirit world, where there's love and happiness and joy. There is no negativity. There's no darkness, no shadows. It's just like Earth. All the scenery here on Earth, imagine it being there, but all the more colorful and vibrant. Even some colors that you can't even imagine. Where everything is alive with a special kind of spirit. Even the flowers, you look at them in heaven, and I've read this before, they look back at you, and they're all praising God for their existence. Isn't that amazing? As we all should be. Thank you, God, for me being alive today. I had nothing to do with it. I can't even remember being born. You can't remember where you came from, your pre-existence, because it was hardwired into your brain not to be able to remember, so you could accomplish what you were set out to accomplish in this life, your mission that God gave you. You were made to forget that you existed before you were born. And when you go back to that place, on that day when your body dies, when our bodies die, it will be a grand reunion. Things will come back to life. You remember all of a sudden the way things were back then. And there is a city. There is a wall around the city. Not everyone gets to go to the throne because, you see, being able to withstand the brilliance and glory of the creator of your souls and spirits, your mother and father God, in the throne room. And yes, there can be no children without a mother and father. And if we are the children of God, we're not going to be motherless children in heaven, my friends. That's another fantasy. It's not the truth that there's only a father. There's a mother, too. Because we live in a universe of mothers and fathers. And you feel the truth of that. Even on Earth here, life cannot reproduce without a male and a female of a species. Yeah? Logical? But it's understandable that we're all evolving. Now, some people have more past lives than others, and so are more evolved than others. So I might have, I don't know right now, how many past lives I have? Perhaps 100, compared to someone who has only 10 past lives. You see how someone who has evolved more would be more concerned about their spiritual development? Because that's what it's all about. Everything else here on Earth is secondary. The object, remember what I told you, is to graduate with honors. And I want to graduate with honors. I want to go to stand in front of my spirit mother and father, my mother God and father God, and see them shining in a brilliance and glory that will wash over me so powerfully, yet my eyes will be able to look upon them because of what I'm talking about. And you can do the same. Learn about extraterrestrials. Learn about near-death experiences. What happens when we die? They're all over. All that information is in the internet, my friends. And I'm just helping you because people have helped me. Take it or leave it, but I know if you're listening to BBS Radio, you want to develop yourself spiritually. So I only have a little bit of time. I love you. Take good care of yourselves. And remember, the one prayer that we should pray, it's a very simple prayer, in addition to asking people to bless each other individually. May God bless us, everyone. This is Blake Ruby saying goodbye from San Antonio. Until next time, 2 weeks from today. Bye-bye.